This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The Northwest Indiana Regional Development Authority is going to hold a hybrid in-person and virtual public engagement session coming up on June 9th and addressing some concerns that people may have about the proposed Hammond Gateway Transit Development District project that that the South Shore Line has planned as part of their expansion plans. But the whole idea of a transit development district comes under the idea that the Northwestern Indiana Regional Planning Commission has. And with us to talk more about the overall project and the concept, we have Ty Warner with us. Ty, thanks for joining us in the program today.
Chris, it's great to be with you. Thanks for asking me to be on.
This is an interesting project. As we mentioned, a lot of it is going to be, of course, tied, at least for now, with expansion along the South Shore Line because of what can be done in the neighborhoods around all these train stations. They're either going to be built or rebuilt, as the case may be. But what is the impact that the concept of a transit district like this will have on Northwest Indiana?
Well, huge impact. And I've said, you know, many times, we have a lot of housing price points across Northwestern Indiana. You can find almost anything in this region, but we have certain types of development and certain housing types that are frankly lacking. You know, some of the vibrancy that you see in some of the neighborhoods in Chicago that are right over our border, but we have folks that are wanting to be in that kind of environment, even if they work in Northwest Indiana, or vice versa. We can't necessarily attract the people that want to live in that kind of vibrant environment, even if they are working in Chicago. And so part of the whole, you know, impetus for this development change that we're seeing coming to fruition at last is the double tracking project that NICTDI, the Northern Indiana Community Transportation District, is doing, South Shore Line, or double tracking of the South Shore, but then also the Westlake extension coming out of Hammond and down to the south. So those are just transformative projects to finally bring this vision to reality, and it would create the opportunity, thanks to the Indiana General Assembly's foresight in adopting these transit development districts around these station locations. The RDA, the Northwestern Indiana Regional Development Authority, and NICTDI are really taking this to the next level of bringing these developments to fruition to create those opportunities for people to be in a environment that is accessible to transit, can get them to Chicago or anywhere along that line, South Bend, and to create that more vibrant, walkable community that we have advocated at NIRPSI, at the Northwestern Indiana Regional Planning Commission, for some time. So this is finally coming to fruition. The long-term vision that has been out there for the region is finally taking place, and that's super exciting.
I would imagine it probably depends on the particular project, how big these transit development districts can be, but how large could they possibly be when you talk about having an impact on an entire neighborhood like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think planners have done for quite a while, especially in the space of what is often called the new urbanism, or trying to recreate the way that we used to do town planning before kind of the automobile took over post-World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pretty much look at development patterns throughout this country to see how that change takes place. You know, there was a certain way that we built that was based on creating a walkable distance time frame of being able to get around your community within a certain radius that is, you know, generally around 10 minutes. Depends on what you're trying to accomplish. But if you draw like a 10-minute radius around the downtown, you can accomplish quite a lot in that time, between 5 and 10 miles. And then you go out 15 miles, and especially if you add the possibility of riding a bike, it's, 15 minutes. It's a time frame calculation, 5 to 10 minutes or 15 minutes by bike. There's quite a bit of activity within that radius that you can accomplish in that distance. And so trying to get to how we do planning and how we plan communities based on human being rather than, you know, 2 tons of steel in an automobile changes that dynamic tremendously. So to create these opportunities around these rail lines where you can get that walking radius within a certain, 5 to 10 minute distance, and then open it up with the possibility for cycling as well. You eliminate the need to necessarily jump in an automobile and go somewhere, so you have an effect on emissions from vehicles, that gets reduced right away. There's a health factor with that, which has been studied all across the country, that when you create the opportunities for folks to walk to where they want to go, the health indices go way up for just being able to get that exercise as part of daily living. Mm-hmm. Whereas if we continue to do things all based around the automobile, where we're firing up the vehicle, we're going, we're driving no matter a few blocks just to be able to get a gallon of milk, that is not a sustainable future. And it also creates the kind of investments that we are more and more challenged to try to fund to create more infrastructure for the automobile. So this whole focus on the human being, pedestrian scale, that is where we really need to go. And when you start talking about that whole aspect of focus, you're getting into these issues of quality of place, quality of life. Time and time again, the surveys that are done, this is where the places that have these kind of amenities, where folks can bike, they can walk to many things if they want to, things within a reasonable proximity. You have a downtown destination where there's, restaurants, there's coffee shops, there's all this sort of thing. This is where people want to go to. And if we're going to capitalize on the future economy of the Chicago region, these are the things we have to focus on. And so your question about the size of these more generally called transit-oriented developments,
right.
The TDD, the Transit Development District, is a funding mechanism to help create transit-oriented development. Around these station locations, it's very specifically identified, but we have the opportunity to do more of this all across northwestern Indiana. And it's that quality of place, enhancing our downtowns, enhancing our walkable environments, less reliance on the automobile. This is what makes us more attractive in this region to really take advantage of the assets that Northwest Indiana already has. You have the possibility of having unique downtown walk environment to be in, or be able to live within close proximity of that if you want, and be able to not have to get into your car, and then you add that into not only the availability of commuter rail to get you into, Chicago or South Bend, either way. And on top of that, you put into the mix an extensive bike trail network that we already have, over 190 miles of paved trail in Northwest Indiana. That's up from only about, 13 miles of paved trail in 1990. When you can access that network, you've got a quality of place, just kind of juggernaut that this region can become. And so the focus on this is critical. And the size is really determined by what makes sense from a walkability perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And when you reach a certain limit of that, it's time to think about where's another center that is within that radius that perhaps one center connects to another center. It all goes back to something NERPC did back in about 2013 or so, a Creating Livable Communities project, where we went around to all the communities in Northwest Indiana and spoke with them about their downtown places, what they consider to be their most walkable environments, or if they don't currently have an identifiable downtown. And we do have some communities that were developed, post-50s or so that don't have an identifiable downtown. Where are those areas where they would like to build up more of a community identity, more of a community center? And we mapped that all out. So back in 2013, that really was part of this trajectory to have these discussions to help communities and assist them with identifying where are those places they want to try to make more human-centric, for lack of a better word, where we can build up these quality of life amenities and really focus resources to try to bring about the kind of places that people say they want.
We're talking with Ty Warner with NERPC about the transit-oriented development and the transit development districts that are created within those that is being looked into, and most of these nowadays at least are based around the South Shoreline stations that we've mentioned. Do we find that this may be a way that we're kind of going back in history to the way that neighborhoods were first created, where you used to be able to live down the street from the neighborhood grocery or the pharmacy, and it was, as you mentioned, it was just a short walk down the street to get a snack or to pick up the prescription or to get some groceries?
Exactly. And that is absolutely it, Chris. That's exactly what we're rediscovering. is that we've had, you know, several decades of what some planners term professional amnesia about how communities used to function.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, what I think is really interesting is think about the places where people want to go on vacation when they have the opportunity to go someplace. I mean, sure, there's natural amenities to get to, beaches and mountains and that sort of thing. But the places where they usually want to stay and shop and all that are exactly what we're talking about, these walkable communities. Even Disney World, you know, Disney World is technically, of course, a manufacturing environment. It's not a town per se. But people are paying $100 to walk down Main Street, in Disney World for that same walkable scale. And it's because that's what resonates with us. That's the right scale to be able to do our community activities, our shopping, our eating, all that sort of thing. It feels right because it's based on the human scale. It's not based on being inside an automobile to do those things. And what happened, post-World War II, and not to go into a planning, lecture here, but what essentially happened is the automobile became much more prevalent. Returning GIs actually were encouraged to get homes that met certain standards that were being mass-produced to create housing for them. And before anyone really realized what was happening, we developed a whole different way of building in this country that hadn't existed for this country's entire previous history. And that was all based around easy driving, radii of how you turn a car within a neighborhood to kind of not make the car work too hard, to have to make a turn. It was all based around ease of that vehicle, and that has led to fatalities, unfortunately. The speed of a vehicle through the neighborhood has become a big contentious issue. Whereas the way we used to do neighborhoods, and it was all based on the scale, the automobile is really kind of secondary. It gets you beyond that community and serves a function and all that. But within the community itself, the primary driving force really needs to be about the human being.
Now
about what's comfortable for you. And so you're absolutely right. This is the way we did as a matter of course earlier in our history because we frankly didn't have the technology and things to do anything different. And in some ways, we got a little bit overwhelmed by the technology. It really kind of took over. And so this landscape of strip malls and things that are really based upon ease of access for the automobile for huge parking lots and all that, that's really a pretty short time frame in our country's history. And so those places that have done really, really well and are really successful have rediscovered and reclaimed the more human scale environment that we had at an earlier time. And that's not to mean that we don't take advantage of advances and technology and the ability of our vehicles to be able to function more efficiently and all that sort of thing. But it does mean that there are certain principles that we kind of forgot about that we need to bring back. And these transit-oriented developments really start getting at that again.
Yeah. Now, Ty, let me ask now, since we're into the idea of the expanding this, in particular for the Hammond Gateway project that's part of of South Shore Line, and that's what the idea for this public engagement session coming up June 9th is all about, do you see the possibility of this type of project, this type of, expansion going to other areas besides just around public transit?
I absolutely do. I think as people see the success of this, that this is something that fits in with modern life and conveniences and all that, that this is totally, part and parcel of that. It's not something foreign, and it's something like I mentioned before that we actually make an effort to go to when we go on vacation to other places. Because of the character, the walkability, the human scale, et cetera, this is absolutely transferable. And something I'll just bring up as an example, Hammond did recently a downtown project where they brought in a consultant named Jeff Speck that took the community through relooking at their downtown and how to do this very thing. How do we recapture a certain way of building and community development that really enhances the walkability of our downtown places and makes it more of a human-centric environment again? And part of that proposal involved changes to Holman Avenue to make that more inviting, make that more safe to be able to walk around in. And what I've said this over and over again, what I'm really thankful for Hammond's foresight in bringing in Jeff Speck and doing that project is that now we have a plan that we can easily point to as an example of, okay, this, they were able to do it in Hammond, and it is just a matter of scale as to whether that can apply to any other community in Northwest Indiana, regardless of whether they have an actual, train stop, because that's not going to happen anytime soon for some communities. Although, you never know far into the future, as there could be rail expansions coming in between South Shoreline and Westlake as things advance. That's been talked about for a long time. Just like the Chicago Dash currently comes to Valparaiso, a bus line that takes folks to Chicago, but in some ways it's a precursor to that sort of rail idea. But that's another form of transit. Buses transit just as much as a train.
That's right. So
in areas that are very transit-centric with opportunities with bus transit or any other form of public transportation, you create this opportunity for transit-oriented development. But the main fundamental thrust that can be transferred to any community in Northwest Indiana is, how do we take advantage of learning from those principles to make something inviting, to improve the character of our downtown area, to do those things that make us proud of our community and want to identify being in a particular community? That is learnable by any community anywhere in this region. And so what comes out of this transit development district process is absolutely transferable to any other place in Northwest Indiana.
Well, Ty, we're going to have to revisit this, because it'll come up again and again, no doubt, as more developers realize there's a good way to be able to offer this type of expansion and these types of developments, and a little different from the usual. And we appreciate your insight and your comments today.
Thanks, Chris. I really enjoyed talking with you, and I'm looking forward to what the region has in store.
Thank you very much. Ty Warner is Executive Director of NERPC. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The Lake Area United Way is working with a number of Northwest Indiana financial institutions to create what the United Way is calling their very first Community Savings Challenge. And with us to talk about the challenge is the Financial Wellness Coalition Coordinator for the Lake Area United Way, Aaron Stoich, with us. And Aaron, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you, Chris. I know it is a mouthful, the title, and I appreciate being here with you guys and being able to share about the Community Savings Challenge, hoping that we can just get the word out to the community.
Well, this is a very important program. The entire topic is all part of financial education, which I think we all need a little of, no matter how much we know or in how much we've learned in school or learned in the College of Hard Knocks in life. We still need to get a little education, and this is a good way, and savings is a good way to be able to help get us by. Will you talk first about the setup for the Community Savings Challenge?
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. So we have at Lake Area United Way, we have a Financial Wellness Coalition, which is made up of financial institutions and other nonprofits in the area, and then some government entities that work on things like housing with HUD funding and things like that. So coalition is working on making some strategies around building financial stability in our community. And so this was one of the strategies that came out of that. So what we're doing is we're encouraging community members. We're actually even including our partners, our employees at Lake Area United Way, as well as our clients that we serve at Lake Area United Way, to save $250 over the next 6 months. And the reason why we are doing that is because we know that around 40% of people, and that 40% of Americans, do not actually have $400 in savings that's fluid that they can access in an emergency. So we're just trying to help them get there.
I know that a lot of what the Lake Area United Way does as part of their goals is to help groups which are called ALICE families. Will you kindly explain for folks that may not be familiar with the term what ALICE means? And certainly this is a big part of what they need to know if they don't already learn it by the programs and initiatives from the United Way.
Yeah, I absolutely will. And thanks for bringing that up. So ALICE is an acronym that we use for research, but it stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed. So what we're talking about is a population of people that have jobs. They might even have two or three jobs, but they are still unable to afford the basic necessities. So those are things like food, housing, health care, child care, digital access, so the internet, things that, in our life today we have to have to get by. Even though they might be working more than full-time hours, are not able to access all of those things. they're living paycheck to paycheck. They're having to take on debt to survive. And so what we do in our Lake Area United Way program is called Level Up, is we try to help those individuals and those families to get better paying jobs. So we bring them into the program and they get a personal case manager who will help them to identify what it is that they even really want to do. They may have never been asked that question before. What job do they want to have? And then try to help them on that path to getting that higher wage job and then ultimately getting that financial stability, because we are then potentially having people with lots more money and much better paying jobs once they get those skills and trades. And so then we help them to figure out how to better manage those finances.
I understand there's been a new survey put out by FINRA, which is a federal, a nationwide, I should say, a financial assistance group, as well as Save Your Life. And tell us a little bit about this, the results of the study and how important it is, and certainly is very key to the Community Savings Challenge.
Yeah, so actually the 250 mark came out of that because I came across this study during some of my research. FINRA and Save Your Life are both nonprofits that specifically work to with those populations that are struggling financially but still working. And so they really, Save Your Life specifically, is an organization that helps people to save money. So they do incentives and they give rewards and they kind of gamify their platform. You link your savings account to it. So Save Your Life has the access to all the data. They've got about 500,000 users. So they pulled a subset of that group, and they found that people who had $250 in their savings account were seeing these really great benefits, things like having way more stability in their housing, so they were less likely to have moved over the last couple of years. People that had actually even $100 were less likely to have used a payday loan, a pawn shop. They were able to keep their lights on, and then they were also less financially stressed overall. So we picked that 250 mark really because we knew that it correlated with all these really great benefits.
Now, we know that obviously the coronavirus pandemic has caused a lot of problems for everyone in some manner or another. What kind of problems do the results of the pandemic, the impact of the pandemic, maybe I should say, will have for struggling families and trying to be able to save just a little bit and at least not even as much as you're hoping to do in the challenge?
Right. So obviously the pandemic just threw tons of people for a loop, especially with childcare. Because these families, a lot of them rely on that child care to be able to go to their two or three jobs every single day. Mm-hmm. And so Lake Area United Way does have a child care program where we help subsidize families, so I will say that. But obviously, you know, times have never been harder for some people. And so another one of the reasons why our organization and our coalition talked about $250 is because we know that traditionally financial advice would tell you to put 3 to 6 months worth of saving away. And that could honestly just be a total non-starter for people because they don't think they can attain that goal. And so $250 over 6 months is around $10 a week. If you're getting paid every week or every other week, $10 or $20 to just pull out right away. It's important that you make it automated so you never even see that $10 or $20. And we really just hope that people can feel that they can attain this goal, that it's something that will benefit them in the long run, because we know about all of these benefits with housing and avoiding those high-cost debts. So that's kind of where the 250 came from and why we're mm-hmm. hopeful that despite the pandemic and all of the things that have limited them, especially in the past year, that's something they feel they can attain.
We're talking with Erin Stoich. She is the Financial Wellness Coalition Coordinator for the Lake Area United Way. The United Way has just created its very first Community Savings Challenge. It's underway right now through the end of November. And I know, Erin, that the website, the main website, the Lake Erie United Way website, LAUW.org, has a special page talking more about the challenge, and also has some interesting facts on there, too, and tips for people that might be having some problems in saving money at any particular case, not only for the challenge, but anytime. Will you tell us a little bit about the page?
Yeah, sure. So you can actually register, and if you sign up, it's free to sign up. I'll get your information, and then I'll be able to send out things to you as the 6 months goes on. If you need motivation or support, if you're looking for more tips, I'll just be kind of in contact as the 6 months goes on to ensure that people are getting the help that they need if they're stalling or things like that. And then there's some information on there. There's a link to that Saver Life and FINRA study, and there is some tips and tricks that you can go to. America Saves is a really, you might have even heard of it, as a pretty well-known organization that encourages saving as a campaign, and so there's some links to there. And then I'm going to be sharing things like webinars or different trainings that people can access throughout the 6 months as well.
I also understand, too, that the page also has information for people that maybe are not familiar with banking accounts and the like, and they can help through the United Way, help get connected to a community bank that will help them out.
Yeah, so we actually have a number of bank partners. So as I mentioned on our coalition, we do have representatives from various financial institutions in Northwest Indiana. So I will go ahead and just tout some of their amazing work. They're all volunteers, and they do this really because they care about our community. So BMO Harris Bank, Frontier Bank, First Financial Bank, First Merchants Bank, First Midwest Bank, First Savings Bank of Hagwish, People's Bank, PNC Bank, and Woodforest National Bank are all incredible partners with us, and they've all they've given me the information about their savings accounts that they have that are affordable and available for our community. So if people do not actually already have a savings account and that's something they're interested in getting access to, I am more than happy to help them through that process, because we know that that can also be just something that could put people off from starting to save in the first place, is not having access to those safe and affordable accounts.
That's right. And that information, by the way, can be found on the Lake Area United Way website, which is www.lauw.org. It's a page that's entitled The Community Savings Challenge. And Aaron Stoisch is the Financial Wellness Coalition Coordinator for the United Way on this particular project and others through the Lake Area United Way. And Aaron, thank you very much for being with us, and the best of luck on this program. We hope a lot of people take advantage of a chance to learn how to save if they're not familiar with it, and especially people that are struggling and or they know of family members who are struggling, so they can get some financial help in a way that they probably never realized they could, by just saving a little bit every single week out of their pay to go into savings. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Chris.
That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for joining us. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we have a special Best of Regionally Speaking show. We hope you'll join us for that.